Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Retro Asylum podcast. I'm your host. Oh, I can hear someone's phone going off there. Is that yours, Swainy?
I'll switch it off. I think that'll be best. It's not going off, but it's, what is it, the background, you know, that noise it makes?
It's probably like, it sounds like when someone's going to get a text message.
Right, that's switched off.
Right.
Sorry, mate.
No worries, we'll try again. And welcome to episode 3 of the Retro Asylum podcast. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and with me as always is the one, the only...
Swainy!
Hey, we finally got that right. Second attempt, or was it third attempt?
Second, I think.
Yeah, but you know, you probably heard it anyway on the actual intro joke thing there. But anyway, yeah, today is the Replay Expo 2011 special report. So we'll tell you exactly what we got up to that weekend and what we witnessed at Replay Expo and what it was like. And of course, Hotel Alcatraz.
Oh, yes.
Right, so before we move on to that then, Swainy, anything Replay Expo? You're now a married man.
I am. I am a married man, and has it been any different? No, not really. Not since we got back off of honeymoon, anyway. You soon swing back into the work mode, and you just get on with normal life yet again. So, nice big party, lovely wedding, went really well. But yeah, it's just the same thing, really. So, folks, if you could get out of it for a while, do so.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, since you're a married man, you sound really bunged up. Is that the new you?
I think it's the trip to Blackpool. I ended up waiting for probably nearly 2 hours for a coach in freezing cold on my own. And the coach park was virtually a car park. And, yes, so I've come back with a stinking cold, so... You'll have to bear with me on this one, I'm afraid. Normally I breathe heavily, so I'm going to sound like some pervert down the phone today, I'm sure.
So you're going to sound more of a pervert than ever then, Swainy?
Oh, yes.
Right, well, anyway, congratulations on you being a married man, you know?
Thank you very much.
So I'll tell you what, let's kick it in and let's talk about exactly how Replay Expo went. So let's talk about the journey there. What time did you get up? Because we went on the Friday and it started on the Saturday and Sunday. What time did you leave on the Friday?
Right, well, first of all, I got up at 5:30, thinking that my coach was at 10:30. Now, right. I live near Stansted Airport, and I had to get to Victoria Station, coach station in London. So I had to drive down to London from near Stansted, park up in Hackney, get a bus to Victoria, bus and a tube to Victoria, then get on the coach. It was... Only when I got up at 5:30, I've looked at my coach ticket, and the coach isn't actually due until 11:30. So I'd got up too early for no reason whatsoever. So I ended up leaving here about 7:00 in the morning, and that's when the fun began.
So right. So what time did you actually set off from Victoria?
It was 11:30, the coach.
Right, and I think by that time, you'd actually already heard from me about 3 times because that's I was really excited. I was like Mr. Enthusiastic going, oh my God, I can't believe it's, you know, Replay Expo weekends. Where are you? And you're like, I'm on the coach. I text you again, where are you? I'm still on the coach.
It was one of the worst journeys because you actually have to change coaches at Manchester. And the coach from London was running late. And I nearly missed the coach that I was meant to get on once I got to Manchester. So that was great fun. And then it finally pulled in at Blackpool around, I think it was about 7:30.
Oh, man. So how long did it take you in total then? Your total journey time?
I can't even add it up. I'm being thick. But, it was too long. It was a nightmare journey. I was sat next to a fat Polish guy who kept... He was eating all smelly food, and each time the coach stopped, he jumped off, had a cigarette, and it was like he was rubbing the cigarette all over him. He stunk.
Oh, man.
So that was horrible.
It's like what I was saying to you when we were at Blackpool. What is it with these journeys that you're never, ever stuck with some gorgeous, big-breasted female? It's always some big, fat, smelly guy. It's sod's law.
Yeah, and the thing is, I was one of the first people on the coach. There was seats everywhere. And this guy came and sat next to me more or less straight away. He didn't even go and sit elsewhere. As soon as he got on the coach, I just had this feeling. His eyes, there was something strange about him, and yet he had to come and pick on me.
It sounded like he fell in love with you at first sight. Oh,
blame him.
So did you guys talk at all the whole journey down there, or was it just awkward silence the whole way?
It was complete awkward silence. I didn't say one word to him. I don't even think he spoke any English.
Right. Well, maybe he thought you were Polish. You know, you might look a little bit Polish.
Maybe. A lot of people think that I am foreign in some way, so who knows?
Well, let me quickly tell you a little bit about my journey, and then we'll move on to how, you know, what we met up in Hotel Alcatraz and all that. Well, I originally thought my coach was at, I thought it was around 1 o'clock. No, I thought it was about 3 o'clock.
Don't you mean train?
Yeah, sorry, my train.
You travelled first class. I travelled, riffraff class.
I forked out the extra 30 quid to actually get there by train, but I thought it was at 3 o'clock. So there's me about 9 o'clock in the morning, phoning you up, going, are you all packed up? And I was really excited. And then I thought, you know what, let me just look at my ticket. And then I thought, oh, crap, I've got to be there in a couple of hours. So I literally got the underground, straight down to Euston, and found my train, no problem. And, yeah, it was nice. Had my own little seat there until some guy decided to join me. He didn't say much, but he wasn't a big, fat, smelly Polish guy. He was just some guy in a suit who was just, I don't know, doing his work on the commute down there. So my commute, to be honest with you, down there wasn't that bad. I listened to a few other podcasts, enjoyed it. I was really excited. And then I think I got there before you.
You did, yeah.
I got there to Blackpool a good hour and a bit before you, and I just thought, you know what? I'm not going to wait an hour and a bit for Swaney. So I thought, what I'll do, text you to say that I'll meet you at Hotel Alcatraz, and made my way down there. So tell us, what was Hotel Alcatraz like?
Well, it wasn't as bad as what I was expecting, to be honest. The only trouble was that the shower didn't have any hot water. It's lukewarm. So that made things a little bit uncomfortable. And I had a great view of a brick wall from my window, which I found quite hilarious. It was a good job I wasn't going there for the hotel room. But, yeah, it's a place to stay overnight. It was fairly clean-ish. And, it done its job.
You know what?
Fairly cheap.
I had the exact opposite, because I think you saw my room at one point, because I had, like, I think a double room, and my shower had, I think, if anything, the water was far too hot.
He's probably taking my shit.
Yeah, so, like, I had a nice little room there, but the only thing I would say about the rooms in Hotel Alcatraz were that they were paper thin.
Yeah, you said that at the time. I was on one of the end rooms, so I don't think there was many people staying down my end of the landing.
Yeah.
I could hear people coming up the stairs sometimes.
Let's talk about that first night, though, because we arranged to meet up with Ian, who some of you may know from YouTube, who he does like loads of Mega Drive things. And he's got like a Mega Drive site. Again, I cannot remember what his Mega Drive site's called.
And I can't remember either.
I think it's Mega Drive Memories, but anyway, I think me and you must be getting old, Swaney, because we must have met them at the pub about 9 o'clock-ish, was it?
Yeah, we were pretty much only out for a couple of drinks, weren't we? I think you got to remember as well, we'd both had fairly long journeys, and I don't think Ian had come as far. So maybe that was something to do with it. But yeah, maybe we are just lightweights.
Yeah, well, I mean, him and his friends were really extremely enthusiastic at the pub, really loud and everything. And there's me and you after about two drinks thinking in this sort of, I think it was a Wetherspoon. No, was it a Walkabout pub?
It's a Walkabout pub, but it was like Geordie Shore, wasn't it? It was, I mean, honestly, people, the ladies in there was all sorts. It was from, there was like 65-year-old women in there who were at the pool. Plus, there were some nice-looking girls in there, but there was also some girls with them. Massive, chunky, orange legs, and, oh, it was scary at times.
It was. I mean, I think after a while, I mean, I said to you, like, I think I'm getting too old for this because the music started getting a bit too loud. And I think we ended up leaving by about, what, 9:30?
Yeah. It's quite sad, really. But, you know, I've never met Ian before or the two other chaps. And it's interesting talking to him, but the music was a bit too loud. And, you know, it was awkward to try and have a conversation.
Yeah.
Plus, a few of the guys in there were dancing about and they kept bumping into me. And, yeah, I am getting too old for all that. It was...
Yeah, because I remember on the walk back, because it was a good, 40-something minute back from a hotel, you kept on going, oh, those guys kept on bumping me. I was really tempted to say something that was really annoying me.
But they were all bigger than me. That was the trouble.
Yeah, but I think that was the beginning of our grumpy old men style version of replay, you know, Expo, because by the end of it, we were grumpy. But
We were.
Yeah, so, I mean, at one point, I was thinking, oh, my God, how am I going to sound positive about this at all? But thinking back about it, you know, I can see the funny side. So, anyway, following morning, we wake up, Hotel Alcatraz, you know, we're still alive.
We made it through the night.
And we started walking to Replay Expo.
Or at least we thought we did.
After about a good 30 minutes, we realised it was completely the opposite way.
Yes, that was my fault. I apologise.
That's all right. But in the end, we ended up getting like a taxi down to the hotel, which was, what was the name of it again? Norbert Castle.
Norbert Castle, yeah. Quite a big hotel.
Yeah, big hotel down there. And I think we finally got through there. We ended up going through the foyer. And we thought, like, hey, well, we don't actually need tickets to get into this venue because there was like a pretty big room with loads of people who had stalls.
Yeah, and I didn't even realise that there was a queue at the other end. So we started roaming around looking at the bits and pieces that were on display and for sale.
In this little room, though, one of the first people that I noticed was Lofarius, a.k.a. Keith. And he had his little store there, and that's where he was selling his Nesbit magazine. So straight away, I rushed over, introduced myself, because I'd spoken to Keith a few times before, you know, via Twitter or via email. And the first thing I noticed, it was his magazine. His magazine is really well put together.
Yeah, there's, I'd seen some images of the magazine beforehand online. So I had high hopes for it, but actually seeing it in print was something else. It really did come out very well, very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can still buy his magazine if you go to bit.com. And I think as well, his magazine is also featured in the new issue of Retro Gamer.
It is indeed, yeah. Darren has given a nice page right near the front of the magazine, so plenty of people should see that, yeah.
Fantastic. So I really hope that his magazine does well, because a lot of hard work's been put into this. You know, it has got that feel. The way it looks like, it's like one of the old school Nintendo magazines that came out. It's got that whole look and design feel to it. It's really well put together. So I actually bought, I think, three of those. I bought one for myself, one for Malk, and one for Tony, because, yeah, you know, for all the hard work on the site.
Have they received their copies yet?
No, because I'm completely broke after that weekend.
Yeah.
And after buying the house, you know, I haven't got a penny to my name now, so I think they're going to have to wait till Christmas until they get their copy of that.
Well, they could have worse Christmas presents.
It's true, it's true. Now, after speaking to Keith, we had another little wander around. Do you want to tell people what other sort of computers and things were at this room?
That first section, first thing that I noticed was the Speckador 64.
Right.
Which was, basically, I think it was a Commodore 64 inside, but the shell of it, it looked pretty much like a Commodore 64, but it had been, the plastic was black, it had the Sinclair logo on it, plus the old Spectrum colours, the colour badge.
Yeah.
So it was just eye-catching. As far as I know, it was just, you know, a normal Commodore 64, but it had been done up in a way that it looked like a crossbreed between both Sinclair and Commodore. It was very eye-catching.
Now, any idea how much this actual Speckador actually cost?
To be honest, no.
I think I did ask the fella. I think it was Ken's.
Yeah, that's right.
Who was actually doing that. And again, I've got to plug Ken's. Ken's has got another amazing retro gaming website, which he deals with gaming music. And I think it's called One Man and His Mic. And if you love gaming music through everything from the Spectrum to the Super Nintendo, check it out. He's got like about, I think, 8 podcasts that he's done, but a lot of hard work goes into his podcast. And I think Ken's also had like other things on his stall as well. He had some modern releases. I think there was a Commodore 64 game that had recently been released.
Yep. It had quite a few different things. Plus, he also had the Commodore PC.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
It was him who had that on his stall.
I think it might have been. So why don't you tell our listeners exactly what this Commodore PC is?
Well, basically, it's a modern-day PC in a Commodore shell. And, again, just for having, you know, it's one of those iconic computers. And just having a modern-day PC running inside that shell, it was just it was a bit strange, but certainly impressive. I know they're rather expensive. I don't think I'd be buying one myself, but...
That was the next question. I was going to ask you, would you consider getting yourself one of these Commodore PCs?
If I could find one at the right price, maybe. Mm. Personally, I'd rather have one that was done up as a Spectrum.
You know what? That'd be fantastic. Imagine surfing the internet on your little rubbered keyboard Spectrum 48K.
That would be pretty mad. I mean... For me, being more of a specky boy back in the day, that would be the ultimate. But it's just nice to see the old machine in being used in that way.
I mean, I'd probably get myself the Specador because I thought it looked beautiful, and it just looked nice. I mean, you did put a picture of this on the forum as well. So if you go into retro gaming, I think somewhere along there, we've got like a Replay Expo 2011 sort of like thread. And you've got loads of pictures. We've got some videos down there. We have got more videos coming up, which Glenn is going to upload at some point. He recorded quite a bit of footage, unlike me, who would record about 2 minutes and then I'd get distracted and record something else and then turn it off.
Yeah, we both forgot our video cameras, didn't we?
Yeah, we had so much planned for the event. We had our T-shirts planned. We had like our video camera, but... Unfortunately, none of that came into fruition. The next thing I want to talk about that I saw there was a stall called a 1-Up, 2-Up. And basically, it was a guy that was selling bubble T-shirt, mugs, badges. And I thought it was absolutely fantastic, Swainy. I included the badges in the random rambling video I did the other day. And basically, for those who didn't see it, the T-shirt was fantastic. The T-shirt was a black T-shirt with the level of bubble. And you had little badges that you could place on the T-shirt so it looked like you were playing the game. And I thought it was amazing. And I don't think this guy's website is up yet, but once it's up, I'll put a link to it on the site, and I'm looking forward to contacting these guys, and hopefully we can get a couple of freebies as well somewhere down the line.
Yeah, that'd certainly be worth a blag to get hold of one of those. I mean, it's one of those ideas, you see it and you think, why didn't someone else think of this beforehand? But because it seems so obvious, but it's a great idea. Basically, you've got a blank bubble level, and yeah, the badges are the enemies, the characters, the pit, all the fruit and stuff. It was pretty amazing to see.
Yeah, I would have happily bought one of those T-shirts. I think the T-shirts were going for about £10 or £15, if I'm right. But
I was also impressed by those plush toys that he had.
Yeah, I think it was a bub that he had, actually.
That's right, yeah.
I would actually love to get one, and I'm sure I remember carefully. You said, I'd love one of these for my daughter, but secretly, I knew you wanted it for yourself.
I wanted it for myself so I could have a bit of a night in Hotel Alcatraz.
That's it, yeah. Why not? Right, so anything else in that first room that you noticed and that you really liked?
There was the Competition Pro joysticks, which came with a Commodore emulator, Commodore 64, and an Amiga emulator. I was going to pick one of those up, but I couldn't be bothered carrying it about because that was the first bit that you walked into, and then we'd be roaming around the rest of the site all day. I thought, no, I'll get one later and then I didn't end up picking one up at all.
So why don't you describe in more detail exactly what these controller joystick things were then?
Well, basically, it's a Competition Pro joystick, which was probably one of the most popular joysticks back in the 80s. It was, I don't know if anyone can remember, but basically it had two buttons on, one on the left, one on the right, depending whether you was left or right-handed, one stick. And this new version, they'd done two models. One was in the original colours, which was clear with red plastic for the buttons and stick. And the other one was gold, like a metallic gold, which resembled the old joystick awards that they used to do back in the magazines in the late 80s. And it was basically the old style joystick, but with a USB connection. So you could use it on your modern day PC. And it also came with a disc with, I think it was about 99 Commodore 64 games and 50 Amiga games. So for, I think that's retailing for £17. It wasn't a bad price. You know, you got a load of ROMs with it, so...
I think it was perfect. I was so tempted to get one of those as well, Swaney. But again, we hadn't even properly entered a Replay Expo. That was just the foyer thing.
Yeah,
and I didn't want to carry things around, like you said.
That's it. It's carrying stuff about, plus what with the marriage and, you know, it was the end of the month. I didn't have that much money, so I didn't want to just go and blow what little money I did have before I actually got into the main hall. And it's like a bit of a cheapskate.
I think I'd probably spent about a tenner before I walked into the main hall, you know, considering I bought the magazines, the badges, and a few other little bits and bobs. So is there any other little things that stood out for you in that foyer?
The only thing I remember seeing was school days running on a different PC other than... Wasn't the Commodore or Spectrum version? I can't remember.
Was it the Acorn or something?
It might have been the Acorn. Yeah, it was in monochrome, black and white, but it looked quite impressive when it didn't crash.
Yeah, that was one of the bad things though, because you know all these things are being put to the test, and sometimes the games did crash.
Yeah, you know that's probably a homebrew version of the game. It might not have been the finished program, so. I'm not too sure. I didn't actually ask about that, but it looked quite impressive.
Yeah, because, I mean, you've actually worked on one of the remakes, didn't you?
Yeah, Class of 99, I had some involvement with that, and so I'm a big fan of the original two games anyway, so it's always nice to see them running on different hardware.
Did we get any pictures of that at all? I can't remember whether we did or not.
I don't think I did take any, so unless you did, which I don't think you did.
I don't know, because I remember when the first 10-15 minutes I was on top form, Swaney. I was introducing myself, I was going, hi.
We're on fire.
I'm Andy, I'm from the Retro Asylum, I've got this amazing website, retro gaming website, and you know, sometimes we'd like to grab into, and I couldn't stop nattering on, and I think as the day went through, you were like, look, they're so-and-so, and I'm like, nah, I'll talk to them later. Exactly, but yeah, you know, I talked to a few people in that first room. All right, so we walked through, queued up. You got your tickets and your little wristband.
Yes, I had to get the girl to put the wristband on me because I had my hands full with, I don't know what, nothing really. I just wanted her to put it on, so I was being lazy.
Me too as well. I pretended I couldn't put it on. But yeah, I was expecting a little different wristband because on my ticket for Replay Expo, I got a press pass. So my press pass, and it was ridiculous what it said on my ticket. It was exactly the same as your ticket, but someone had scribbled on it, press.
Yes, and there wasn't even any press areas for you to go with your exclusive press card, so it was all a bit strange.
I thought I was going to get like a laminated that I could put around my neck and then just go, look, press. But yeah, I got the same little wristband, and we went in, and that's when it hit us. It was just like the darkness, all these different consoles, the lights flashing there, the music blaring away. It was quite a spectacle for me, especially since I'd never been to one of these things. What was your first impression?
It was a little larger than what I'd previously experienced with a retro event. It was strange. The lighting in there was a bit dark and there was blue lights. It's all a bit, late 80s disco sort of thing at first. But, yeah, it was... I mean, when we first got in there, it wasn't too busy. It was buzzing, but it wasn't too bad. But then suddenly, maybe half an hour, 45 minutes after we had arrived, it seemed to start getting very packed and very warm.
Because, I mean, from memory, I think for the, one of the, what I noticed was you walk in, on the left-hand side, there was just a huge queue of arcade machines lined up going right down to the opposite side of the room. And then on the right-hand side, you had the bar in front of us. You had, like, the Rock Band stage. I don't know why they had Rock Band there, but they had it there. And then they had, like, a little round table, and they had, like, I think Batman the movie on the Amiga.
That's right. Yes, they did. They had Batman movie on the Amiga.
It's a great game. Great, fantastic movie license that was.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what else they had on that little round table. There's a few
Batman on the Mega Drive as well.
Yeah, there seems a few different Batman games, and then there was something else. There was consoles and computers on that round table. But I'm just trying to think what was on there. I can't remember now, to be honest.
All right, so why don't you tell us, like, the machines and consoles that caught your eye and, you know, what you liked, what stood out for you?
Right, well, there was a few Vectrexes about, which was always nice to see, although only one had an overlay, so everyone who I was trying to show the Vectrex off to was probably thinking, oh, it's just black and white, it's boring, which didn't go down too well. There was Japanese NES, the Famicom, which I'd never actually seen before in the flesh, so to speak, which was that red console. I think got a picture of you playing.
That's right, yeah.
There was loads of different systems there, and some that I hadn't seen before. Lots of different versions of the Amiga. It wasn't just the Amiga 500 or 1200 or 600. There was ones that had come out on the market quite early, and they were huge. I've forgotten how big the old Amigas were. There was a few different stalls that were doing their own little arcade cabinets as well, which I really liked the look of, but couldn't afford.
So, I mean, talking about arcades, there was one that just instantly made me think, wow, I want one of these. They were selling, I think, the cabinet for about 250, I think.
That's right. That was just the cabinet on its own with the joystick and buttons, wasn't it? But nothing actually inside it.
And I so badly wanted one of those, and I ended up talking to the guy, introducing myself, and again, it was like, hi, my name's Andy, I'm from RetroAsylum.com, and we've got an amazing website, and we'd love to grab an interview with you. And again, after that spiel, I started finding out a little bit more about the arcade machine. I so badly wanted one. I could have bought one then, there and then, if I had the money.
Yeah.
How I would have got it home, I haven't got a clue, but they were really solid as well, really sort of like...
They were very nice. They were slightly, they wasn't as tall as normal arcade machines, but very sturdy, well built, very flash looking. It would look lovely if my wife would let me have one.
You know what? You know, like I was saying, my wife said I could have one. Mm. I spoke to her yesterday and she was like, no, we can't have one.
She'll tell you straight.
She did, and like I was reduced to like being like a little kid. I was like, but you said I could have one originally.
And what was her excuse?
We haven't got room.
Oh,
but the new house is bigger, so I don't know. I might just buy one, not tell her.
Talk her around. Yeah, just say, look, it arrived in the post. I don't know who's bought it.
I'll just say that, you know, Swainy bought me one because I'm such an amazing friend. And he goes, mate, here you go. It's a reward for you.
Yeah, I've got the money to just throw away like that. Yeah, I wish I did have, so I'd have one myself. But it did look nice.
We'll be right back. let me quickly tell you one of the other highlights for me. One of the things that caught my eye as well, they had like a projector screen. And on this projector screen, I think it was someone was playing it like it was a tank stick. But on the main screen itself was R-Type. And I tell you what, wow, did that game look amazing. Didn't even look pixelated. The picture quality was perfect. And it was just amazing playing a game on a screen that size.
Yeah, it was. Like you said, it just didn't look pixelated at all. I'm not too sure how they done that, because obviously when you make any, especially the old school games, enlarge the image on a projector like that, normally they get very blocky and look quite horrible, but that wasn't the case at all. And they were running a few different games on that projector over the day, well, over the weekend, and they all looked like if they had upscaled very nicely. Again, very impressive.
Did you actually get to have a go at R-Type at any point? I can't remember whether you did or not.
No, because I think we were both worried, wasn't we, that the entire hall would see just how bad you are at these games and probably laugh at us.
Because R-Type is a tough game, Dean. It's incredibly hard, and I didn't want to embarrass myself.
Yeah, I can probably get onto the second or third level at the most, you know, and that probably wouldn't have happened in front of all those people anyway, so...
Now, I think to the side of it, they had like a little Star Wars miniature.
It looked very impressive. It was a miniaturized version, but it had the original arcade controller, which isn't a. I don't know how to describe it. It's basically like something out of the TIE Fighter that you hold on to. Mm-hmm. It looked very nice. I love vector graphics anyway, and Star Wars is a nice, colourful vector graphics game, and yeah, it did look the part. I did want to take that one home as well. In fact, all the arcade games there, I would have quite happily stolen them.
Yeah, you end up feeling like a little kid in a candy store, because there's so much to see, and you're like, oh, I want this, I want that, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's it does take you back to your younger years, I think, because obviously you don't get to see these things every day anymore, and there's a lot of stuff I'd love to have got my hands on, and even spent a bit more time actually playing them, but there was queues, and you know, it was the, like I said, the thing with a projector, everyone was watching, so you'd feel a bit of an idiot if you didn't get too far in the game.
Well, you know what I found out? Because I've been doing a bit of research, looking online, because at some point I'm going to interview a lot of these people. I'm going to send them out emails and stuff. But I found out that there's this company called Replay, and they rent out consoles, computers, arcade machines for parties. And you can start off as with parties as small as 10 up to 1,000 or more. So, you know, obviously, if you look at their website, you can sort of cater for what you actually need. So maybe somewhere along the line, I might try and organise my own little Retro Asylum meetup, and hopefully we'll get people that show up this time, and we can have some consoles and
that would be cool.
Play at.
That would be very cool. So does this company, you know, can they do this all around the country, or is it just certain areas?
To be honest with you, I don't think my research went that intense, because that's the amazing journalist I am. But let's quickly tell you one of the other machines, which I had never actually seen in real life. I'd only seen on YouTube or on a website. I saw the Atari Lynx, the original one.
Yeah, they are a lot bigger. I've actually got my Atari Lynx here with me because I bought a couple of games, and it is nowhere near the size of the original.
I would say the old Atari Lynx is longer than like a laptop, because it's a pretty big chunky thing as well.
It's pretty much, yeah, I'd say that the original one can't be far off the width of my laptop that I'm using at the moment. It was unbelievably big, and to think that these were sold as portable devices to try and compete with a Game Boy, you know, it's just picking that up alone would... save you going to the gym every week.
Yeah, I mean, the design, basically, I think they look beautiful. I mean, if I'd had the money or had space, I probably would have bought myself one as well, just to have one. Graphically, I think the games looked really nice, actually. You had some decent arcade conversions for the Atari Lynx. You had, like, what was it, Road Blaster, you had Rampage, you had Stun Runner. Loads of decent arcade games got made for that machine. But it's just a shame, apparently. What was it? The battery life was rubbish.
It was the battery life, and the screen was quite hard to see in daylight, like a lot of these things are. And it was just, you know, it is the size of a house brick, virtually. So it was some great games on there, like you said, some nice conversions, but at the same time, I think they were a bit too expensive, and like I said, the battery life, and it didn't get the range of games that the Game Boy did. Nintendo had their finger on the market at the time. They had everyone signing up contracts with them, so that's how they won over, I think.
Yeah, well, the Game Boy, for its time, was compact. It was clear screen. You could see what it was. Battery life was good. Yeah, it was a good little handheld.
Yeah.
One of the other things I noticed there as well, I'm getting all excited talking about this, was this little machine. It was called Astral Wars.
Yes. I've still got one of these, and we've got a couple of nice pictures of you playing that.
Yeah, it's tough as hell. That game is tough. I couldn't even get... Yeah, I don't know, kill a few aliens without actually dying myself. But I used to be really good at that game. I used to be awesome at that.
Yeah, I used to love those sort of games. You had the Tomytronics 3D things as well. What were they called? They didn't have any at Replay, but a similar sort of time that they were out. As...
You're right. I'm actually surprised they didn't have any of those there.
Hmm.
Because they had pretty much every sort of computer or console known
to
mankind.
That was the only thing, really, that was missing. But I didn't realise at the time, I didn't mention it.
All right, so what we'll do, we'll move on to the next little section here, and you actually bought something, didn't you, from, what was it, Retro something, was it? Retro Passion or
it
something?
It was Console Passion.
Console Passion,
yeah,
that's it.
I bought two Atari Lynx games. Turns out I've already got one of them, which was APB, but I've been off the Pac-Land for a little while. I don't really go hunting for Lynx games. It's only if I see them cheap. And this was two games for a fiver. It was unboxed. Pac-Land didn't work when I first plugged it in.
Oh, I bet you must have been thinking, crap.
Yeah, I was. And basically, you have to have the cartridge in at an angle for some odd reason. It works fine. But, yeah, Pac-Land on the Atari Lynx is a quality conversion. It's probably one of the best I've played because I only had... a ZX Spectrum and an Amiga with Pac-Land on.
Yeah.
And the Amiga version wasn't bad, but it just, I don't know, to me it didn't feel too good. And the ZX Spectrum version, as we know, is flick screen. It's missing loads of little features. The music's nice on it, but that was about it for that version. So the Atari Lynx version plays very similar to the arcades. It's a great little port. So I'm very happy with that. APB, I've already got it, so I've not even bothered loading up my second copy.
Yeah, oh man. So at which point did you realise that you already had another copy of APB?
It was only when I got home, and so I had to dig the Lynx out of a drawer, because it's a, you know, they're big machines anyway. This is the Lynx 2 that I've got. So it was buried underneath a pile of crap in a drawer. And before I've pulled the actual console out, I've seen the back of a couple of games, and I've ain't got a few. Double Dragon, obviously, because I'm Double Dragon man.
I was wondering when you were going to mention Double Dragon.
Well, can we go a podcast without saying Double Dragon? I think it's impossible.
I think it's like Tony's not saying things like that. It's just impossible.
It is. It's getting embarrassing now. So, so, yeah, I've pulled out a few games, and I flipped one round, and it was APB, and I thought, oh, shit, I've already got it. But, you know, at £5 for two games, I can't grumble. I thought, and I nearly didn't pay for Pac-Man, did I?
I was just about to mention that. I was hoping that you'd sort of move on to that, because I remember at one point I saw you going through this little box, and then you look like, I don't know, really like you were like up to no good to the left, and then you look to the right, and then I saw you, and then what were your words that you said to me?
I said, shall I just walk off now, or should I pay for this? Basically, I was trying to get the attention of people working on the stall, but they were too busy looking elsewhere. So, yeah, I nearly did do a naughty and walk off with it. But I'm not like that, honest. so yeah. I didn't pay for it. Yeah.
No, he did. I saw him exchange cash for that. I didn't see him sort of like run off with it, and then he just ran off.
I'm squeaky clean, Dean. I can't believe that.
Squeaky clean, Dean. For a moment, you nearly lost that name then, if you had
I did.
Stolen that.
Yeah, it was very shady of me.
I would have reminded you non-stop, but yeah, I'm actually surprised, Dean, that they actually had all these things just out in the open, and they weren't really being guarded that well, you know?
No, for people who didn't go, basically they had two cardboard boxes with, one had a load of Atari games in it, 2600 Atari games, so it was all loose, you could look through them, and the other one had, I think it was Game Gear games in it. And the Atari box had a few Atari Lynx games. So, you know, I had long sleeves on. I could have easily have tucked a game or two up. Not that I know about these things, but I'm sure it would have been possible. So, I nearly got done for shoplifting.
Can you imagine? This podcast would have been different. I would have been recording with Glenn and you would have been going, and I still can't believe that Swaney got arrested. They pinned him down to the floor.
How embarrassing would that have been for a £5?
That would have been on Retro Gamer magazine. Good old Daz, he would have had to report his old boss.
That would be the major headline in Retro Gamer. War never been so much fun. War never been so much fun. War never been so much fun. War never been so much fun.
So there was one store that got me ultra happy and extremely sort of like smiling like a child, and that was, I can't remember what the name of the store was.
I think it was Attic Bug.
Was it Attic Bug? But I still haven't posted my picture, but they literally had like, what are they called, crates or something? But they had like loads of Spectrum games all lined up.
Yeah.
Amstrad games, Commodore 64 games, and it's something I hadn't seen in so long. It just made me feel like I was 11 years old again.
The way they had done it was just like an old computer market. It was like a stall, wasn't it? Just set out with, like you said, crates of... It was budget release versions of Spectrum, Amstrad and Commodore 64 games. And it's just so strange seeing them laid out like that again. Especially for myself. I used to work on a stall that laid out games like that. Exactly the same way, so it was a bit of a deja vu moment.
Why don't you tell us a little story then, Dean, about when you used to work in the little store and what you used to do with the copies?
I'm going to end up getting arrested after this podcast.
The Federation Against Software Theft will chase you.
They will come after me. Basically, I worked for a guy who, he had a shop on Canvey Island called Canvey Software. And he had a stall down Roman Road Market, which is in the East End of London. Anyway, me and my friends, we were about 14, 15 at the time. It was a Saturday job. We're working on this stall, and the guy would come down from Canvey Island, bring all the stock with him, set the stall up, and then he would go off. He'd either go back home to Canvey Island, or he'd go to the betting office and just spend the day in London, but he was never stayed on the stall.
Yeah.
So we started working for him, and you know, it became obvious that we had the whole day to run the stall ourselves, and it's fairly busy, especially from lunchtime onwards. So we'd let him set the stall up, and then I would normally just grab every new game, no matter what format, and run home, which is like a 15-minute walk away.
Yeah.
And I would spend all day copying the games. Then I'd bring them back before he came back to collect the stock, and he'd say, why haven't they sold today? They're brand new. And I said, well, you know, maybe next week. And sure enough, the next week we had them, and they were there. They would sell. So this place ended up shutting down. It was probably my fault. I should laugh, but yeah, we did use to copy the odd game or two.
Oh, man. I thought you were clean, squeaky Dean or whatever.
Yeah, no, there's a darker side of me, I guess.
You were even shifty back then. But yeah, I mean, it was amazing, Dean, actually seeing all these games. I mean, I ended up buying myself 4 games. I showed some of these games that I bought on my random rambling video that I did on the Retro Asylum.
Yeah.
Let me quickly tell you the reasons why I bought these games. I bought Shinobi because Shinobi on the ZX Spectrum, it wasn't the greatest arcade conversion ever, but I loved the arcade game so much. And I don't think it was one of the games that I've still got in my collection now. And the other game I got was Ovida Saint Monty. Now, the reason why I got this was because I knew Ben Dalglish was going to be there, and I was kind of hoping he would sign it. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. Dragon Ninja, again, it was one of my favourite arcade games. Not a great specy game, but I did get that signed.
You did.
That was by, I forgot what his name is now, was it?
Mark Jones. He done the graphics on the ZX Spectrum version. So it was the Spectrum version that you bought.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually working on the Attic Bug store. He was a really nice guy, I thought. He was very genuine, had plenty of time to speak to us, really easy going as well. I'd spoken to him on the World of Spectrum forums a few times because, like him, I'm quite into my pixel graphics and mm-hmm. you know, I tend to do those sort of things. So we had a bit of common ground to speak on. But, yeah, he just seems like a really down-to-earth bloke, and it's strange, you know, I used to see his name on so many loading screens and on the credits of Spectrum games back in the day, and to actually get to talk to the guy, and he's as nice as anything, and he's not actually that much older than me. I think he's only about 5 or 6
years. That's exactly what I was going to say, Dane.
Yeah,
I was going to say that. He's not much older than us, because I was literally looking, and I was thinking, oh my God, you've made games, and at the time, I must have been about 11 or 12, and looking at him now, he's only a few years older.
Well, he is, and it's funny, he was telling me, not on the day, but I've spoken to him in the past, and when he got the job at Ocean, he actually lived in Northampton.
And, right.
Ocean are based in Manchester. So when he got the interview, his mum took him up there on the train.
Right.
Because he was only, I think he was still 15, he was just coming up to 16 years of age, so you know, he ended up, I think he had a flat share with some of the Ocean programmers and other graphic artists at the time. But yeah, it was, you know, a big step for him. He had just left school and he got this job at such a young age. So that's why he's still quite young today.
It's unbelievable thinking a lot of these guys were youngsters, only a few years older than us, and they achieved so much, you know. But it's great that they still have this passion for what they did back then, and it was amazing seeing them there. One of the games I bought there as well, Swainy, I want to quickly mention, was Double Dragon. And didn't you have a small conversation about the Spectrum version with this guy as well?
Yes, because as everyone will know, I've been working on a new version for the ZX Spectrum of Double Dragon. It was supposed to be on show at Replay, but unfortunately the programmer Didn't show up. I've not heard from him since, so I don't know what's going to happen with this. But Mark Jones basically said, try and find yourself another programmer.
Yeah.
Which would be great, but it's finding someone who can actually take on such a big project. You know, I've still got my fingers crossed, but I'm starting to lose hope that this project's ever going to see the light of day. And it's very disheartening because, as you know, I've put in so much time on these graphics, and it's something I just want to see running on the Spectrum. I know that that machine can produce a better version of Double Dragon, so
I'd say 20. Sorry to cut you there, mate, but I'd say, I don't know, give this guy a few more months, whatever. If not, just say, look, how are you going to do it? And then, if not, just give him a deadline. And then, if not, put it out there in all the forums. You never know. You might even get like an old programmer from back in the day who might think, you know what, I want to do this.
Yeah, it'd be nice. It was a shame because I did actually see a Spectrum coder wandering around on a Saturday. Jim Bagley, he'd done some great games, but Midnight Resistance was one of
these. Oh, my God, yeah. You pointed him out, didn't you?
Yeah, and I thought, you know, we'd see a bit more of him. Unfortunately, I think he must have been there for the morning and only saw him a couple of times. And, you know, I don't know the guy, and it can be a bit awkward just going up to someone, especially if I was going to ask him something like that. I'd like to get to know him first before I laid on a question.
Oh, definitely. Like, I mean, how did you recognise all these people, Dean? Because you were going, that's so-and-so. And I'm like, really?
Mainly through photos in the old magazines. And because I used to run a website, gamestyle.com, a few years back, a few of these people have been at certain events that I've been to, so I've probably chatted to a few of them before, but yeah, they're just heroes of mine, and I'm pretty good with remembering a face, so that was pretty much it. I mean, on that stall where Mark was working, we had Bob Wakelin, who was the Ocean package artist. All the box art from the old 8-bit and 16-bit days, most of his work was on show at the stall, but yeah, you know, he provided Ocean with so many different covers, and again,
I mean, I bought the mouse mat of Batman.
Yeah, you bought the mouse mat of Batman and Shadow Warriors, wasn't it? So again,
Batman's so iconic, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd seen an interview with him from years ago, and his picture was in it, and he hasn't aged that much, so I managed to recognise him. But we had a nice little chat with him as well, didn't we?
Definitely. I mean, I want to try and get in contact with all these people. I did sort of tell them who I am, Retro Asylum, blah, blah, blah. And I am going to sort of like try my very best to get interviews with all of these people. Hopefully they will do, you know, if they can spare a moment of the time.
Yeah, well, it's always worth a try.
Right. You know, before we move on to the next bit, you know what I thought you could do, Dean? I know who can program your Double Dragon game.
Go on.
The guy who originally programmed the original Double Dragon on the ZX Spectrum, but hopefully this is his second chance to redeem himself.
I've already tried that.
Have you?
Yeah, I spoke to him probably 2 or 3 years ago now, David Leach.
What did he say to you?
To be honest, he wanted to defend his version of the game. He looked back at it. He was quite appalled that there was no music whatsoever.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, at the time, that was the best he could do. And I appreciate, you know, that he didn't have the skills at the time. His second game, which, funnily enough, was the Spectrum version of Shinobi.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so you've got two of his games there. It did play slightly nicer.
Oh, no, it did, definitely.
It had some great music. It had the 128K version. So,
yeah,
he definitely... And he'd done NARC as well, which, again, on the Spectrum was a terrific conversion.
Superb. It's probably the best 8-bit version.
Yeah, it's one of the slickest conversions you're going to see. So it's just a shame that that was one of his first projects. You know, if he'd been programming a little bit longer...
Yeah.
I'm sure Double Dragon could have turned out great. And if he was to do a version today, if he could, don't get me wrong, he's moved on to bigger and better things. He now codes for all different machines. I know he does a lot of work on the Nintendo DS at the moment, but, you know, he'd done Mortal Kombat 2 on the Mega Drive, which, again...
Did he?
Yeah.
Wow.
Great conversion.
Definitely.
So it's a shame that, you know, don't get me wrong, I'll give him stick over Double Dragon on the Spectrum, but
yeah,
the guy can program. he was just learning his trade at the time. It's just unfortunate timing of it.
Yeah, I think maybe if he'd done like another game before Double Dragon, which wasn't so big name, like a big Connacht conversion, maybe if it had just been some independent sort of like budget game, people wouldn't have been as harsh on him.
Well, you know, I think everyone had such high expectations, probably because of Target Renegade, which had been released that summer. And we all knew that the Spectrum was capable of a decent Double Dragon game, so that's why he gets so much stick. But I kind of feel sorry for him, but at the same time, I wouldn't mind giving him a poke in the eye and saying, don't do that again.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got to try and get him on the podcast, so it would be interesting to sit down and have a little chit-chat with him.
Yeah, like I said, I've spoke to him via email. He's a nice enough guy. You know, it's just one of those things. It's... a lot of people had their Christmas Day ruined by that game. It's just unfortunate he didn't have the skills at the time to pull it off.
I think we'll probably get you to interview him, because I'd probably be, my first question would be like, come on, mate, what happened with Double Dragon? Oh, honestly, you ruined my Christmas. You made me cry.
Yeah, I think as people have said to me, you know, it's an ugly game, and he didn't do the graphics. That was two other guys, and they should have been shot, because the graphics on that game were very, very crude.
They should have had you, mate. They should have had you on it.
Well, I was only about 13 at the time, so...
Hey, a lot of these guys were young as well.
True.
Have you played Atari today?
Give a man an Atari game and he'll turn into a little boy. But don't worry, he'll be grown up enough to share it.
All right, let's move on to the next thing then. Now, we did manage to have a little chit-chat with Darren from Retro Gamer.
Yes, basically, it sounds like I'm blowing my trumpet, basically, but he used to work for me on my old website, so it was nice bumping into him, because he had never met you before, and he explained, you know, that some of his success might have been down to me slightly, so that was nice. But he told us lots about the magazine. Did you find it interesting?
I did, actually, yeah. I mean, I learned a lot from him as well. You know, he was telling me about how magazines actually work, the pressures that are put on them, and he has to deal with quite a lot. I'm really, you know...
Yeah, I think there's a lot more to it than what you realise. Like he was saying, you know, with all the different meetings, and he has to get things approved, and because of the advertising, it does sound like a nightmare, really. It's a dream job of his, but
yeah,
he started off writing for me, doing the retro section on my old site, and plus a few of the, he used to do modern game reviews as well.
Yeah.
But he specialised in retro, and his enthusiasm for it was second to none. And it's I don't want to sound too bleak on it, but it's a shame that now it is his job, and you know, he doesn't really like doing it outside of his job sort of thing. Although, saying that, I'm sure he still does get a buzz out of it.
Oh, no, definitely, definitely. You know, every time you play, like, a game that you hadn't played in ages, you'd still get that, you know. But I found him really pleasant, really down-to-earth, you know. And it was just nice seeing that the professional side of it as well, because, you know, I do this as a hobby when I've got a bit of spare time. So that's why I quite enjoy it. And I find it hard the moment I spend too much time on it, or I give myself a deadline and I can't accomplish that. And I'm thinking, wow... He's got that to deal with.
Which is a shame, but he does a great job with the magazine.
He does. It's like what I said to him. I think he has helped to sort of like bring retro gaming back into the mainstream, because basically, you go into any news agent, you see a copy of Retro Gamer. When you think of retro gaming magazines, you think of Retro Gamer, and it's so well written, so well put together, so well researched, and... Again, it goes to the enthusiasm of Darren. You know, like you said, he's the perfect man for the job, and it's worked out well for him, fantastically.
Yeah, it's, don't get me wrong, there's a few mistakes in some of the issues from time to time, and sometimes they tend to mention the Amstrad spit a bit too often, for my liking. Yeah. But, it is the magazine... for the retro scene, and God, that rhymes, that sounds awful. We'll start using it. It's a great magazine. I pick it up every month, and I couldn't imagine life without it. God, that sounds even worse.
Yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to steal those taglines when I come out with my Retro Asylum magazine.
I think I should go into marketing or something.
I think you should do, because you've got these catchy little phrases. You can make a fortune out of that. Maybe radio jingles, perhaps?
Yeah, maybe. Hi, mate. It's your number one DJ. Sounds even worse with a cold.
Yeah, it sounds quite a lot like you when you've got the cold. Right, so is there anything else you want to tell us about Replay Expo that you got on your minds?
Well, I'm going to have to mention our game on Sensible World of Soccer.
Oh, classic. Go on, I'll let you do it.
Well, I'm crap at the game, but so's Andy, and I nearly beat him, then he nearly beat me. So it's just, I've not played it in years, and I'm not a big football fan at all. Don't get me wrong, when England play in the World Cup or the Euro, whatever, I get behind my country, but
yeah,
in general, I've not got a team I support or anything, so football for me is like a foreign language. But I really enjoyed it. It was only 5-10 minutes we played, but that was a good laugh. But I really did enjoy that, and it was nice to get back onto an Amiga, because I haven't really played one of those in a long time.
I think I'd only played on Amiga once at a mate's house, and I was blown away by the graphics on that. But I'll tell you what, I'd never enjoyed a game of Sensible Soccer as much, because I think from time to time I play it on my Super Nintendo or I play it on my emulators, and even on the Xbox 360 against the computer-controlled players, but I did not get that buzz playing there on the joystick against you, because you beat me the first game. I can't remember who won the second one. Was it me?
I think it was you, yeah, yeah.
The first game was embarrassing, though, because I scored like an own goal.
You did. Yeah. Well, normally, I wouldn't win. I am bad at the game, but yeah, it's very enjoyable.
Absolute classic. I think we're going to have to sort of like, I don't know, at some point, someone who's got an Amiga, I'm going to have to sit down there and play Sensible Soccer. Fantastic game, mate.
Top stuff.
Right. Any other little things you want to mention about Replay Expo?
Trying to think now. Not really. I got to meet Glenn
for the
first time, so that was nice. He's very enthusiastic, even more so in real life. But yeah, he's a top guy. He's very friendly, and so is his missus.
Yeah, we got to meet his good lady, Jackie. You know, it's a pleasure meeting her for the first time. She was just as enthusiastic as Glenn, all happy there playing games.
Yeah, I was very surprised, because, you know, most people who bring their other halves to these things, you can tell that the other half doesn't really want to be there, but she seemed to enjoy it, which was a good thing.
So yeah, after Replay Expo, I think I ended up going back to Hotel Alcatraz and ended up passing out because I was worn out completely, just all that walking.
Yes, I was a bit tired myself, but I think I ended up watching The Only Way is Essex on ITV 2. How sad is that?
He's sad, sad man.
In a lonely room in Blackpool.
Oh, anyway, so we ended up going to the Replay Expo party at the Hilton. Now, I think, weren't we like the first couple of people there?
We were, and we were late, weren't we? I think we was probably about 20 minutes late, and there was still no one there.
At one point, I thought, oh my God, this is going to be so awkward, about just 10 people there, nothing more. But slowly, the crowd started coming in, the table started getting filled up, and that's when we saw the itchy one himself.
Ben Daglish.
What a legend. What a character.
He's something else, isn't he?
I tell you what, I didn't realise people like him actually existed. He's just, I don't know, how would you describe Ben Dugleish?
He looks like someone who's been living on a park bench for the past 6 months. But he's such a nice guy, but totally crazy. Very bizarre looking at him, but he's amazing to watch playing in his band, and yeah, he's certainly got something about him. But he did make me feel a bit itchy.
I did. I left that place and I was like itching. I mean, after I shook his hand, my hair was itchy. But basically, I remember when he first got the microphone, he was like, "Hello, it's me, Ben Dugleish." And then he played on his little flute, like, yeah. And he was just making these funny little movements. I don't know. He was like a cartoon character. He's not like a real life person.
No, he's very animated, and it was strange. What was the band called?
Sid 80s,
and yeah, they had
stuck in the '80s.
Yeah, they had Fred Gray, who looks like a skinny version of George Lucas. So you had this animated nutcase at the front, which is Ben Dugleish, nice guy. I know I'm taking a piss here, but he does look like a nutcase.
And then
you had George Lucas on the back playing keyboard. It's just bizarre.
And then you had some Swedish guy. His name was Andreas, and I want you to yell.
Yes, Andreas. I think he's an Amiga composer. As far as I remember, he works on Team 17's games.
Yeah.
Who else was...
Some other guy playing the bass. I can't remember who he was.
They were all quite well known, but obviously Ben Dugleish and Fred Gray. Also, and it was John Hare from Sensible.
Of course, John Hare. He was another character as well.
Yeah, he's a funny guy.
Absolutely, a superb guy, great voice, brilliant guitar player. But it was just amazing watching these guys play these classic songs. Admittedly, they didn't play the songs that we wanted.
Yeah, it was a shame. Some of them weren't so recognisable. I think it was only Cannon Fodder's music that I really recognised, to be honest. But it was still impressive watching them.
Oh, the Cannon Fodder was just amazing. Just like... it was just John Hare singing that line, and then just all the guys playing in the background. I mean, it just blew me away. But again, I think for me, it was Ben Dugleish that stole the show. And at the end of it, I ended up going up to him, ended up having a little chit-chat with him, shook his hands. And I say, well, I'm looking forward to interviewing this guy when I do get the chance to interview him.
I thought you were going to say you was looking forward to your shower once you got
He was like, hello. Can you imagine what it's going to be like? He's going to go, hello there, guys. It's me, Ben.
Let's hope he doesn't listen to this. He'll never talk to us again.
Well, you know what? He's completely loopy. And I'm sure if he does listen to this, he's got an amazing sense of humour, because he would have to, because let's talk about the dancers.
Let's put it this way. I don't want to offend anyone, but when you go to these retro things, you've got a rough idea that there's going to be a few geeks about. Well, imagine three geeks dancing like geeks have never danced before.
But there was the ultimate geek. He was the uber geek.
Yeah, he was a strange guy, because all the way through their performances, he kept getting up and he was getting right in front of the band, taking pictures in certain... poses. He was pulling the poses. They were, and he was basically getting in everyone's way. He kept pushing past people, to move their chairs out of the way and all that. And to be honest, he started getting off my nerves a bit.
But do you remember when we first got into the after party? He sat down next to us.
Yes,
he said to us, "Do you mind if I sit down?" And I'm like, "Yeah, go for it." And then afterwards, he was like, "I'm really sorry, but I've got to go now."
Yeah,
and
we hadn't even been speaking for 10 minutes. He sat down, sat there, listening to us speak, and then said, "Oh, I've got to go, I'm sorry." Okay, fair enough.
It's like we were all devastated. It was like, no, please don't, please. It's been such an amazing opportunity getting to know you.
Yeah. And you got some video footage of him dancing with...
You know what? I think Dugleish should hire this guy, because towards the end, it was a mixture of like Ben's crazy music and just the whole band going, and this man's crazy dancing. At one point, he was doing like this Russian dance on the floor with his legs.
I thought he was having a fit at that point.
But it was classic, though. Every so often, he would stop, catch his breath, sort of like wipe his armpits and carry on dancing again.
Wipe his armpits. God, that is so true.
You know what? I completely forgot to mention the pub quiz that they had.
Yes, we weren't cheating at all, were we?
Oh, man. How sneaky was I?
Very good.
What was the question again?
Oh, it was something to do...
It was, okay, yeah, which arcade game was named after a famous rock band?
Yeah, we thought Aerosmith, but...
It began with a J, didn't it?
That's right, yeah, it started with a J, so we couldn't think of it. So Andy sort of disappeared. Next thing I know, I've got a text message with the answer on it, which, yeah, I wrote that.
And then we kept on sort of hinting to each other just to make sure we had written it. It's like, so how was your journey?
Yeah.
My journey was really good.
By the way, the answer was journey.
Yeah. Oh, mate.
We're doing fairly well up to a certain point, and then you really had to know your stuff. You had to be a proper geek, which, me and Andy, we're geeks, but we're not that far into it. So
I think me and you were the coolest geeks that there were there.
We're cool. We are cool. Coles. That's how cool I was.
I was like the Fonz. That's how cool I was. I was like, eh. But, yeah. I forgot to mention, I got recognised at Replay Expo by one of our community members.
Yeah. See, you've got your own stalker.
I'll tell you what, because Pete did mention that he was going to be there. He sent me a little message.
I'm only teasing.
But it was just earlier on, Pete, if you're listening to this, I was saying to Swain, he's like, oh, I'm beginning to feel a bit left out. No one recognises me. Where's our fan base? And then luckily Pete showed up and he's like, Andy... And that's the bit where I went, yes, someone knows who I am. I'm not just another face in the crowd. So, yeah, I played it cool, shook Pete's hand. I went, hi, nice to meet you. You know, I hope you enjoy the podcast. He's like, yeah, listen to the podcast. And I'll tell you what, I think I might give Pete a prize, actually. You know what? I think I will do. So what I'm going to do, Pete, if you're listening to this podcast again, send me a little message via the site or via email or via Twitter, and I'm going to send you a little prize. Now, I might send you, believe it or not, my Shadow Warriors, Mouse Mats, or one of my old Specky games, or my Bubble badges. I will let you pick one of those. So, Pete, contact me via Twitter or one of the other ones I mentioned, and you'll get a little prize just for making me feel ultra special that day.
You did make his day.
I did. I felt so happy. I was like, yeah, someone recognised me. I even told my wife about it. I was like, someone recognised me. And she was like, you geek. So, yeah, well, I think we've been nattering long enough. Is there anything else you want to add to this, Swainy?
Just that I won't be rushing back to Blackpool in a hurry. No, we had a good time. We had a laugh. We were a bit moany on the trip, but...
Oh, before I actually we end this podcast, on the way back, you know, because I was really grumpy towards the end because it was a long journey. We had done the same thing 2 days in a row, lots of walking. The food wasn't that great. I think I got to about crew. I think I text you about this. I got to crew and I had my seat reserved on the train. And I was like looking for seat number 14. And I'm like, excuse me, is this number 14? The guy blatantly looked at me. He goes, no, I don't think it is. And I sort of carried on looking around. Then I looked and I thought, actually, it is seat 14. Yeah. So I went back and I was like, excuse me, mate. And he ignored me. And I was like, excuse me, mate. And he ignored me. So then I tapped him on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. And I was like, this is seat number 14. And he looked at me and he said to me, and? At which point, all that rage just built up inside me. And I'm like, get off my fucking seat. And everyone on the train just looked.
Oh.
And he's like, I am moving. And I was like, you ain't moving fast enough, mate. And then he got up. He put his head down and off he went into the next train carriage. And I felt like such a man. And I just sat there thinking, yes, my blood is boiling.
You drew your line. your line. He saw the line. He knew not to cross it.
Yeah, you know, I thought for a minute he was going to start a fight on me. Yeah, you know,
how old was he?
He was probably about my age as well. I mean, I was prepared for it. I was going to attack him with my Nesbitt magazine, roll it up and hit him with it.
Yeah, it can be a lethal weapon.
It can do, mate. So, yeah, you know what? I've nattered long enough. This has been our point of view of Replay Expo 2011. I will talk a little bit more about it next week with Glenn. Yep. Is there any other things you'd like to say, buddy?
Not really. Maybe we could end with my choice of music of the week. Maybe. I don't know. It's entirely up to you. I won't hum it, though, because maybe Glenn will do that.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll include your music of the week in between the podcast somewhere.
Yeah.
And we need like a remake music of the week. What should we go for? I'm thinking...
Oh, that's your choice.
You know what? I'll surprise you guys. Enjoy it. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. You've been listening to Retro Asylum, Episode 3. Oh, guys, forgot. Thank you for the iTunes reviews. We've got 6 now. Thank you big time. Keep them coming. It makes me happy.
Cheers, guys.
Hi there, guys. Now, there's no such outtakes on today's podcast because we recorded slightly longer. But there is one thing that I do want to include, which I completely forgot to include, and it was to wish Glenn a happy birthday. So I've had to re-edit this because I had to include this in here somewhere. So first of all, I basically asked people on the forum to send Glenn some happy messages. So first of all, message from me saying happy birthday, Glenn. You know, and hope you enjoy your wonderful day. Your birthday's already gone, but hopefully you had a fantastic day. Swain says, happy birthday, Glenn, on the forum. Melk1976 says, happy birthday, Glenn, and all the best, mates. Potty Boy says, happy birthday, matey. Hope you had a good day and feel well. Unlike poor old me, I've been coughing up and spluttering up these past few days. And we've got Asperger's Gamer64. He says, yay, happy birthday, Glenn. We got ZX Specstar, and he goes, wah, I missed this one. Happy belated birthday, mate. Do we now call you Glenn83101? And I think we've got one more, and this is from Ads M. And he says, happy belated birthday, mate. Well, anyway, Glenn, hope you had a wonderful day, mate, and hopefully you enjoy the podcast. Bye.